Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, August 5th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to talk about the weekend's box office numbers and then get into a couple listener emails. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, let's jump right into it. Why don't you give me the rundown of the top 10 movies at the box office this past weekend?
Sure thing, and we'll have a lot more to discuss. But just for starters here, the top 10, Deadpool and Wolverine once again topped the charts with a very healthy $97 million second weekend. That would have been a very good number for the opening weekend, so good for everyone at Marvel and Disney on that one. Number two, we have Twister, is kind of a surprise hold in the number two spot, with $22.6 million only dropping 35%, so... word of mouth on Twisters is very good. Number three, we have M. Night Shyamalan's latest, Trap, which debuted with a somewhat disappointing $15.6 million on the lower end of expectations. We'll talk a little bit more about that here in a minute. Number four is Despicable Me 4, holding strong with $11.2 million, just a 23% drop from the prior weekend. We probably won't talk about that one much more, but I will say it is now at $752 million worldwide and locked to clear at least 800, which is pretty incredible. Number five, we have Inside Out 2, also still holding strong with $6.7 million, just a 22% drop from the prior weekend. It is well over $1.5 billion now. Might be able to overtake The Lion King to become the number ninth highest grossing movie of all time. At number six, we have Harold and the Purple Crayon, the weekend's other quote-unquote big new release. Made just $6 million on over 3,300 screens. We're going to talk about this one a little bit, but this is a bad, bad, bad debut here. At number seven, we have Longlegs still holding very, very strong with $4.1 million in its fourth weekend, just a 39% drop. Against all odds, this movie is truly holding incredibly well. It's at just about $80 million worldwide, I believe. At number eight, we had The Firing Squad, which was a low-budget, I believe, like a faith-based type movie from Atlas Distribution. Actually had a decent per-screen average because it was only on 700 screens, but I imagine this will fall off pretty quickly. Number nine, we had A Quiet Place Day One with $1.4 million, lost quite a bit of favorability because it went on VOD this week. That's not surprising. And at number 10, what is surprising is we had Ponyo, the Studio Ghibli film, cracked with $800,000 thanks to something called Studio Ghibli Fest, which I guess is going on right now, but that's kind of fun. So
yeah, I've seen posters at my local AMC advertising for different Studio Ghibli movies that have been playing, I want to say, throughout this whole year. Just like different different months have different movies and stuff, and they're just like these limited engagement kind of things. Just
oh, interesting. So somehow I guess some of the other ones didn't crack the box office enough to get to the top 10, but it's interesting that this one did. Oh, that is kind of interesting that this one did well enough to make it. Well, in any event, like, that's cool.
Anecdotally, I know that people with really young kids love that movie, or I guess I should say the young kids really love that movie. Maybe there's just something about that sort of drew people back out in a bigger way than something that's maybe like a little bit more complicated, like Spirited Away or something like that, which is like a bit more adult in its scope, even though it's ostensibly about a kid, you know. So maybe that's a factor as well, but
yeah, it could be, but interesting nonetheless.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, that's fascinating. Top 10, it feels like a somewhat healthy top 10 at the box office, you know, given some of the stuff that we've been talking about earlier in the year. It seems like, you know, things are going okay.
It's definitely pretty healthy. The thing that I still would like to see more frequently is that every movie in the top 10 at least clears a million. I think we're definitely like still not there yet, because that used to just be a foregone conclusion for the most part. We're like, you know, like that just, so that I'm still a little bit, but for the most part, a very diverse group of movies, things holding very well, which has kind of been the theme of the summer, oddly enough, is that like so many of these big movies have just held very well. You know, you're not seeing these gigantic drop-offs, and even for something like Twisters, where yes, it had a big drop off in its second weekend, or relatively big, but now it's holding really, really well. So that's really nice to see.
Yeah, I think that does that, in your view, does that speak to maybe the idea of audiences potentially getting back in the habit of going to the movies, even if they don't show up on opening weekend. Like, movie theaters may not be in quite as much peril as some of us have feared.
I think at the very least, what it implies to me is that word of mouth is still maybe one of the most powerful marketing tools you can have, and that there's really no substitute for a good movie. So, like, you know, Twisters is, I think you and I fell in a similar place on this, where it's a very crowd-pleasing movie. You know, like, I'm not saying it's like it's not going to win any Oscars, but it's also not really supposed to. It's just like an old school blockbuster, and a lot of people clearly are, you know, enjoying that. So I think, you know, word of mouth there. I think Inside Out 2 has shown stellar word of mouth. I think we'll talk about this more in just a second. Deadpool and Wolverine, for as much as it overperformed last weekend, only, I say, quote unquote, only dropping 54% in the second weekend. You know, that's good word of mouth. I mean, so for me, it's just more that, like, people are talking about the stuff that they're liking. And I think that is coupled with perhaps, yeah, maybe the habit of movie going, maybe the, now we just have movies people actually want to see. I think it's just that, you know, what Furiosa couldn't quite get earlier this year, what The Fall Guy kind of got, but couldn't get enough momentum with, you know, that word of mouth really counts.
Mm. Okay, so before we get into Deadpool and Wolverine, I want to talk about some of the, I guess, the bigger movies that opened this past weekend. So tell me a little bit more about Trap. Like, you said that this opening weekend was kind of on the lower side of the early projections for the movie. So, like, where exactly did that fall? And do you think, like, this is a big stumble for M. Night? Like, what's the assessment here?
Real quick, I was just scrolling through the Box Office Mojo chart here. I would just also really like to point out that at number 16 on the charts this weekend was something called Cat Video Fest, all one word, 2024. And that made $281,000 on 106 screens. So good for everybody at Cat Video Fest. I digress. Trap, let's go slightly deeper on the numbers here. It did 15.6 domestic. 4.4 million internationally, so a $20 million opening. I have seen the budget figures reported to be in the $40 million range for this one. So, you know, it's not great. Definitely on the lower end of projections. I think this is his worst rated movie on Rotten Tomatoes in quite some time. Not that that's everything, but yeah, I mean, look, it's a bit of a misfire, but I think what's interesting is that, you know, Shyamalan still is at least in part self-financing his own films. Mm-hmm. So he's got a stake in this, you know, and I do think at the end of the day, it is the movie he wanted to make. And that's part of the reason he does this. Perhaps the primary reason he does this is that, you know, for better or worse, he's betting on himself and his vision. And, you know, look, a guy like that making original movies, who pretty much save for, you know, Last Airbender, is pretty much always either adapting a movie, adapting a book, or some doing something wholly original. So, you know, the one thing I would say is that Knock at the Cabin last year opened a 14.1. So this is bigger than Knock at the Cabin. And that went on to do 35.3 domestic, 19.3 internationally for 54.7 worldwide. And, you know, clearly Warner Brothers was happy enough with numbers like that to give him a deal and get him away from Universal. Right. So I would guess that movie did fine in theaters, fine-ish, did probably very well on VOD, very well on streaming. Trap might fall into a similar, you know, case where so it could do something around 60 worldwide, which, you know, for a movie that made for 40 is not good, but, you know, it's not so much money that it's doomed to never make a profit, you know. Yeah. Like it, which is sort of why that mid-budget range is nice, where if you can run a reasonable enough marketing campaign and not spend yourself into a hole, you know, over enough time, the life of the movie, it can be okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's not great. We'll see what happens with the audience word of mouth. Like, we'll see if, you know, your average moviegoer is kind of more like, oh, this was cool or whatever. And we'll see what happens next weekend. But, you know, I don't know. I got a lot of respect for what Shyamalan does. And I haven't gotten to see this one yet. And I'm really bummed I haven't. But I don't think it hurts the overall bottom line. I think he's obviously going to he'll probably announce his next movie sooner rather than later. And it's not going to derail his career or anything. So.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
Did you see this one yet?
I did. Yeah, we talked about it on Friday's episode of the show. You know, even though I didn't come away loving it, I think all of us who were talking about it were kind of like ultimately on the same page with it in terms of our appreciation, even though, or I guess in terms of our like overall assessment of the movie, even though some of us thought that where some of us saw bugs, others saw features in the very same things we were talking about. I still love that M. Night's like out there, you know, getting those reps in and just like making stuff all the time. So I certainly would want the best for him in that regard and want him to keep, you know, being out there and giving us divisive stuff that we can argue about and think about. So fingers crossed that Trap at least meets the whatever threshold that looks like to get him a green light for his next project. So I want to ask you, Brian, about Harold and the Purple Crayon. Like, just how bad was this debut? Give me some context for that.
It's bad. Like, I mean, it's not like, again, so this, what's interesting is this is also a reportedly a $40 million movie, before marketing. And it was interesting. I think you and I were talking recently on the podcast where I didn't even realize this was coming out this weekend. Like I knew it was coming, but I didn't realize it was this particular weekend. So I think what that says to me is that the marketing campaign was pretty either muted or poorly targeted, whatever it was, I don't know. But it opened to just $6 million, which was less than Inside Out 2 did on its eighth weekend. You know, also aimed at family-friendly audiences. That's bad. For a 40 yeah, million, wow. Yeah, you know, like for a $40 million movie, it's bad. You know, it was also on a lot more screens than Inside Out 2. So, you know, there's a lot there. Theater owners are probably going to be pretty upset with this, right? So like they're it's probably going to lose a fair amount of screens next weekend. You know, I imagine something like this has somewhat limited over international appeal. I'm not certain. I know the book is very popular and has been for a long time. So it did $3 million internationally to start. So it's only at 9 million. You know, that's pretty bad. You know, I mean, so you're probably looking at, I mean, even if some by some miracle it gets some sort of word of mouth, it would be incredible for this to get to 20 million domestic. So 30 million worldwide would be, you know, maybe. I mean, I'm just, you know, spitballing a little bit, but that could be on the optimistic side. So you know, it's got like a 29% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's not in good shape. I mean, Sony's going to lose some money on it, but they have the deal with Netflix where, you know, this will go to Netflix. It'll probably get streamed. It'll, you know, do what it does on VOD, whatever. But it's certainly going to lose some money for somebody, I would say.
Yeah.
I think for me, the bigger thing here is Zachary Levi, who has had a kind of fascinating downward career trajectory, like rapidly, I would say. Mm-hmm. It's like the weirdest thing with it. I don't. Setting any politics aside, like, it's crazy that he went from, you know, Shazam to, you know, Shazam Fury of the Gods and like American Underdog, and then, like, you know, he kind of handled the Shazam Fury of the Gods things pretty bad publicly and tried to make it seem like he was still going to be in the DC universe, and then was in the Spy Kids reboot that kind of just came and went, and then Chicken Run, which came and went, and now he's got this. I mean, it's just been like such a fascinatingly bad downward trajectory that, like, I don't want to like go overly far to say like his career is over or whatever, but I think like he's got to really pull something out to get kind of back anywhere near the A-list at this point, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. And I think it can't be overstated just how, like, the online stuff about his politics and whatever, like, yes, people who are terminally on Twitter and social media and stuff know about that, but like the majority of people who go see movies have no clue about that stuff.
Right.
So it's not that I cannot imagine that is the deciding factor, that you could point to that as the main reason for this downward trajectory. It's just like this weird, I don't know, just like selection of projects and the confluence of events surrounding all these movies and maybe just different things being bad in different ways. And like Harold and the Purple Crayon, that book came out in the 50s and is like this beloved book for people who didn't grow up reading it or whatever. It's about this 4-year-old boy who draws things with this magical crayon and basically like brings things to life, brings his drawings to life. And this movie, for some inexplicable reason, which I have not seen the movie, I should say, but it updates the 4-year-old boy to a full grown adult played by Zachary Levi. And it's like, I don't know. I saw somebody on, I forget if it was Blue Sky or Threads or something, be like, there's 4 things that you should care about with Harold and the Purple Crayon. It's like kid, magic, purple, and crayon. And like, if you mess up one of those things, you've kind of undone the entire premise of the thing. And that's exactly what this movie did. So like the choice, I would be so curious to know like why they made the decision to move forward with this movie. Presumably you're not going to find a 4-year-old actor to cast in a book accurate adaptation or whatever, but like, why would you tell this story in this way? And I don't know, it just seems like, it's pretty much DOA at this point, but,
yeah, it is. And it is going to be a fascinating tale, but yeah, I only brought up a politics thing to be like, cause there are going to be people on Twitter that might be like, oh, it's whatever. You're right. Most people don't know, which is what makes this whole downward trajectory so fascinating. Like, and yeah, I don't really know what he has coming up next. I know he was like attached to star in some buddy cop movie. I don't know. It really seemed like he was going to really just go up and up after Shazam. And I will say this from a personal note, at San Diego Comic-Con 2 years ago, Zachary Levi was incredibly nice. I did like a red carpet thing. He was a really nice guy. Like I had no reason to ever ever wish anything but good for the guys. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. But every year has them, right? It's one of those, every year has a flop like or two. You can't avoid it. It's some things just aren't going to work. And this one got away from Sony. And my guess is they probably just managed the marketing budget once they realized what they had. And they're like, we're not going to overspend trying to get this thing out there. So that's my guess. And that's where we're at.
Okay, so let's talk about Deadpool and Wolverine and some of the records that it's broken. So tell me about where this movie stands right now.
Yeah, so Deadpool and Wolverine, I mean, just to paint some perspective for you, we've talked a lot about Inside Out 2, which is by far the highest grossing movie of the year with $1.55 billion to its name. It is the 10th biggest movie of all time. Well, now after just 2 weekends, Deadpool and Wolverine is the 2nd biggest movie of the year, having overtaken Dune Part 2 and Despicable Me 4. It is now at $824 million worldwide, with $395.5 million of that coming from domestic audiences. What's interesting about that domestic number is it is now the highest grossing R-rated movie ever domestically, finally overtaking the record that was set by The Passion of the Christ 20 years ago. So there's that. It's going to, by next weekend, reach a billion. I think at the beginning of the year, one of the question marks might have been, wow, can Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, like, help make this, you know, maybe it'll limp to $1 billion? No, it's going to sail past a billion within 3 weekends. So then it becomes a question is how high it can fly. It's now the highest grossing X-Men movie ever. It overtook Deadpool 2, and it's funny because now it's Deadpool and Wolverine, Deadpool 2 and Deadpool are the top 3 highest grossing X-Men movies, which is
that's crazy. Yeah.
It's wild. Like even you think of like, now that is unadjusted for inflation. If we adjusted Days of Future Past for inflation, that would change things. But by the time this movie's done with its run, you know, cause it's at least assured to get to like 1.2 billion at this point. And that's even if things go poorly. You know, it's adjusting for inflation ain't going to matter all that much. I mean, you know, it's going to be one of the bigger superhero movies ever, honestly, which is pretty, I mean, might make more than Black Panther, you know, like, which is like when you know, you think about how much of a cultural event that was. It's like, this is well beyond anything I would have thought this movie would have done. And so, you know, I don't want to speculate too much about what that means, but I certainly don't think we've seen the last of Jackman in the MCU. And I would be, Ryan Reynolds has in a few interviews said that he won't do Deadpool 4. Like, you know, it takes too much time.
Oh, really? I haven't heard that. That's interesting.
Yeah. He's like, you know, like he was asked in an interview and someone asked me, he's like, oh God, no. He's like, my family would kill me, because he really does put all of his might into these movies. I have to imagine they're backing up the money truck and trying to either get him in Secret Wars or just do a fourth. I don't know, but If that holds true, I would be shocked. So
I was going to ask you about that. Do you think that Deadpool would be well served as, I guess that Marvel would be well served to include Deadpool in some of the upcoming projects that it has on the docket, like Avengers Doomsday and Avengers Secret Wars? Or do you think because those movies already are presumably going to have gigantic casts and, you know, astronomical budgets and stuff like that, and all of the flair and spectacle that people would want from a big superhero team up movie, do you think that Marvel would just save Deadpool until whatever the next phase is after Avengers Secret Wars is over to bring him in and whatever, comment on that stuff in his meta way and all of that, and like maybe relaunch, help to sort of like push past the baton to the next phase or whatever? Do you know what I mean? Like, do you think that there's a case to be made for them making that creative decision, either financially or creatively? What do you think?
Well, I think part of it is that Reynolds made it seem somewhat clear that he is like the involvement that it takes to be this character and his commitment to it. He would be reluctant to just, you know, go sign months of his life away to go do it. And especially I think if he's just part of a thing in Secret Wars or whatever. Are we past the moratorium of spoilers here? Because there is something worth, like, there is more to this than just pure speculation. So I don't know.
So actually, let's take a break, and then one of the listener emails that we have gets into this explicitly. So let's roll that in there. Okay. So we'll be right back right after this.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Okay, so I want to get into the listener emails here. Jerry from Ohio says, I love the podcast and enjoy most everything you do. However, I was disappointed in hearing a possible spoiler for Avengers Secret Wars when Ryan mentioned that the storyline in the comic is that the multiverse collapses into one universe. As a person that hasn't read any of the comics and doesn't watch trailers or read up on things before they air to avoid spoilers, I was disappointed to hear what may be a huge spoiler. I just wanted to bring it to your attention. I'm still a huge fan. Keep up the great work. So I'm sorry to Jerry if it felt like that spoiled anything. I sympathize with that feeling. It's happened to me a bunch where I've gone out of my way to avoid stuff and then I get spoiled anyway and it sucks. So I'm sorry that that happened. I will say four things. One, spoilers for Deadpool and Wolverine and like anything we know about the MCU going forward in this conversation. Number two, Marvel has said that the multiverse saga will end with Avengers Secret Wars. So I think it's probably safe to assume that that movie will contain some kind of cataclysmic event that will close the book on the MCU's engagement with multiverses. And I suspect they'll be leaning pretty heavily on that in the eventual marketing of that movie. I know Jerry said he doesn't watch trailers, so who knows? Maybe he would have been able to actively avoid that. Number three, you're listening to a movie and TV podcast that talks about the business and the creative side of these things. So as much as I try to go out of my way to put spoiler warnings up about our discussions of things, you're kind of in some pretty risky territory if you're trying to stay entirely spoiler-free on this stuff. And then number four, and I would argue this is the most important thing, when Ryan was relaying that information about Secret Wars, he was explaining what happens in the comics. And Marvel Studios has shown that they're often interested in tweaking the lore from the comics here and there to serve their own narrative purposes instead of just directly copying stuff that came before. So I think there's no reason to assume that they won't do the same thing here. To what extent, we don't know, but I just wanted to point that out too. So Ryan, let's continue the conversation and feel free to sound off about any of the stuff that I just said.
Well, the only thing I would say about the Secret Wars thing is that I'm just sharing some comic book knowledge, but like, again, yeah, these movies are by no means have they ever like adapted things super faithfully. And I think like, that's just me saying like a very broad plot point. I think if I thought that a movie that was coming out was doing a very faithful adaptation of something or a more, and it was like a very direct plot spoiler, like a character dies or something, I would probably avoid talking about that. I think in this case, like, you know, I'm very spoiler averse myself, so I try to be careful about that. But when I'm just sort of sharing like, you know, broad plot points from a comic, like, I apologize. I truly am spoilerverse, but I feel similarly to Ben. Like, yeah, that's, you know, that's, I, yeah. So I am sorry, but also at the same time, it does come with the territory. But so, okay, so we can talk spoilers now. We're safe to? We're
gonna yes, for sure.
Okay, there is the thing in Deadpool and Wolverine where when Deadpool gets to the TVA, he is being held by a crying Thor with, like, his mask half melted off or whatever. Like, it's not a terrible leap to assume that might be a foreshadowing thing from Secret Wars, right? Like, is that implication that Deadpool is going to be in Secret Wars? I don't know, but it's possible.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually was just listening to an interview with Sean Levy where somebody said, in Deadpool and Wolverine, was there ever an iteration of the movie, a cut of the movie, where Deadpool dying in Thor's arms, where that moment pays off in a different way? And Sean Levy's response was, never. Literally, it was like, hey, wouldn't it be weird if we saw that? And who knows what it means? Maybe that's a problem for Feige to solve later. But it did become this runner because Ryan Reynolds talks a lot and very much thinks a lot about the fact that Deadpool is a fan. He's always been a fan of these heroes. And this kind of obsession with this snippet where he sees himself being cradled so gently in Thor's hulking arms, we just found it very amusing to play with. So that was his quote there. And I was curious about that moment too, if that was like them actively setting something up. But it sounds like, I mean, unless Levy is like truly playing the long game here or something, it sounds like it was just something that amused them on set. And they were like, here, Kevin Feige, have this to do with what you will. If you want this to be something later, it can be. If not, nobody will think about it anymore. Kind of.
Yeah, because Ryan Reynolds had shared some tweet where he's like, I know why Thor was crying. And like, I think to sort of stir the pot. But I think
interesting, man. I'm missing all sorts of updates here and there.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, I get, but so to go back to your original point, there was one project on Marvel's slate years ago when it was announced that, you know, the Fox universe was coming to Disney, and I looked at what Marvel had announced, and I'm like, man, if there was an opportunity to fold Deadpool into the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe, he should be part of the Thunderbolts team. Like, that was what I thought would make a ton of sense. Like, from a tonal perspective, from a guy who's read those comics, whatever, like, I was like, that would make sense to me. And he's been a part of the team in the past, and whatever. Like, I think bringing Deadpool into other, like, properties within the MCU is complicated. I think bringing other people into Deadpool's world is easier. Does that make sense? Like, it's going to be so tough to bring Deadpool into a PG-13, like, I don't know. So to me, I think, like, if you're not, maybe have him appear, maybe have him be a very minor character or something. And like, if there's an F-bomb that you get in your one, you know, maybe Deadpool gets to drop it, whatever. Like, or you make a joke about how it wasn't him. I don't know. But like, I have to imagine the seriousness of Secret Wars would make it so Deadpool being there is distracting as all hell. So I would venture to guess, don't bring him in there, or you subvert expectations and it's serious, whatever. I don't know, but yeah. I would assume not. And if so, it's a minor thing. That's my best guess. I don't know.
Okay. So Zachary from East Central Wisconsin says, he wrote in, and I'm not going to read the entire thing. I'll paraphrase some stuff. He feels the reaction to the Robert Downey Jr. as Victor Von Doom news has been a bit overblown. And Zachary says, although the reveal that Downey is back in the franchise after his character was so memorably killed off 6 years ago was a shock, the main discourse that I keep hearing acts as though Tony Stark with a cape will be walking around the MCU, creating moments of confusion and sadness in the hearts and minds of the MCU characters and audiences alike. But isn't Doom's whole thing that he gets scienced in the face and then hides the face behind this iconic metal mask for the rest of forever? Can't we then assume that we probably won't see much of his face aside from any sort of flashbacks or variant version of the character? And if that's the case, don't we think that RDJ is a strong enough actor to make his performance and character choices unique enough to distinguish itself? I think concern that Feige and Marvel will give in to their worst impulses with this is warranted. However, all the extreme negative opinions I've been seeing feel a bit premature and misguided. So what do you make of this, Ryan?
Where to begin? I would be shocked if your $100 million actor is under a mask for a lot of that movie. Look, I want Doom as Doom. And I believe Robert Downey Jr. is, I believe that part is correct. He is as good of an actor as they come. The man's got an Oscar to back that up now. And I believe that before the man had the Oscar, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe is built on the back of that man's performance. Like, let's be very clear about that. So yeah. Do I think he could act under a mask and make Doom convincing? You bet your ass. Do I believe that they're paying him all that money to keep a mask on? No, I do not. I believe maybe the Doom performance is there, but also, like, is there an absolute possibility that, like, getting Downey back as a Doom variant of Tony Stark or just Victor Von Doom means that he'll suit up as Tony Stark in some way in the multiverse too? Yeah, I do. So I don't know. I think I still don't know how I feel about this. You and I talked a lot about this today. We don't need to rehash our feelings, but like, I think there's reason for people to be trepidatious. I also think there's reason for people to be excited, and I don't begrudge either one at this point. To me, it's all about execution, and that's still where I land on it personally. So I don't know. Do you have any reaction to that sort of thought?
Well, like, I agree with you that, like, there's no way that Marvel made the decision to hire Downey only for them to put him behind a mask for this whole thing. And I could be wrong, but I kind of have to assume that even though the Russos have said that he's playing Victor Von Doom, and the presumption then is that means he's not playing a Tony Stark variant, they'll still want to lean on the history of Downey in the MCU and leverage that as part of the drama of whatever the story is that they're telling here. And the example that I've seen a lot of people use is, imagine Tom Holland's Peter Parker facing off against a guy who looks just like his dead mentor, and what kind of psychological trauma that might inflict on that character that would make for an entertaining fight or exchange or what have you. So do you think that's where we're headed with this, or what do you think? Do you have any thoughts about that?
I have to imagine tons of that stuff is on the table, right? Like, that's gotta be. But I also think, again, like, there's people that have posted, you know, all sorts of versions of that potential fight, you know, making jokes about, you know, I hate you 3000 or whatever, like, and I don't think that's what they're gonna do. Like, I think that, like, the Russos are better filmmakers than that, particularly within this universe. Like, yeah, there probably is going to be some interaction between those two characters, and there's a way to make it, like, actually feel like something. Like, there's a way to make it feel like, oh man, that is crazy. Like, that's damn, that's, you know. So, like, I don't know. I come out on the whole Russo thing and the Secret Wars thing and them being like, I believe that there's more reason to believe those movies are going to be good than they are going to be bad. The sheer talent, you can argue all day about who's getting paid what and is that too much and whatever, but like, the talent there suggests it's probably not going to be a whiff, right? Like, you know, I don't know. Like, I come out on the idea that, like, they're probably going to have some cool emotional moments. Like, if you can allow yourself to set aside some cynicism that might have built up over the last few years, like, you know, there are a lot of people that used to cheer in those theaters that are now just, like, over it, and that's okay. But, like, Deadpool and Wolverine helped rekindle my love for this stuff. And so, like, I'm ready to cheer again. Like, I that's all I can say. I can only speak for me. I don't know, but I do think that both views are valid with so little information as it currently exists. So,
yeah, that's the thing. We just really, there's so many open questions that I still have. And I find myself, like, a little bit more on the positive side than the negative side. I still feel like it was a little bit of a cynical decision to bring him back. But again, we don't know the full context of what they're going to do with these characters. And Ryan, you talking about it just now reminded me of the moment in Infinity War where Peter disappears in Tony's arms and he says, whatever he says, Mr. Stark, I don't feel so good or whatever.
Yeah, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. Like, it's heartbreaking.
I like to keep myself a little bit out of remove from this stuff because I just haven't found an emotional in for a lot of these Marvel movies. I love a few of them here and there or whatever, but for the most part, they really haven't pulled me in a major way. But that moment in that movie, I think I was crying in the theater in that moment. And that's very, very rare for a Marvel movie to get me to do. So, like, if you're talking about reuniting those actors in a potential sort of round two type of scenario where they might be able to tap into something that's truly emotional like that again and make me feel something instead of just thinking about all of the behind the scenes negotiations and all that kind of stuff. Like if they're able to really, really nail this, then I think there is a ton of potential there. So we'll see what happens, but that's kind of where I'm at right now. But
I guess to go back all the way to your original question is like, I think there's zero chance it's the last we've seen of Deadpool. Just money dictates that. Where, who knows? I would imagine they would lean on Hugh for Secret Wars and stuff, leave Deadpool out of it. And then if I were to guess, some point after the multiverse saga, maybe you bring Deadpool back for Deadpool 4 or something. But, you know, that would be my best guess, but who knows?
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But that'll do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all of the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you've never done that before, that helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.